from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the GoodAtheist.net bonus podcast. My name is Jacob Forge.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
You know, I am happy because I made a purchase that I normally don't make. And I'm happy for two reasons. One, I did not pay a lot for this purchase. And two, it's something that I never, ever buy myself, ever.
Underwear?
No.
That's just one of those things. You don't even realize it until you go to buy it, how expensive it is.
Yep.
And it causes problems. It's like $12 for two pairs. Unless this is the weird thing. Tidy Whiteys, you can get like a box for nothing.
I tried that, man. When I was economically desperate, I thought to myself, this is where I can
This is where you cave. Out. This yeah. is where you cave.
That is not where you cave. Like, do not cheap out anything. I mean, I'll cheap out on just clothing. Because it'll just fall apart anyways, and it doesn't matter too much to me. But when it comes to underwear, I mean, you try not to cheap out. You're walking with that all day. It's got its hands on your privates. Don't let any old hands in there. Take care of your privates.
But no, yes, just wanted to put it out there. Yeah. Price of underwear, outrageous.
Totally
continue, my friend. Continue.
Well, I bought myself a poster. Now, there's that running joke about how sterile and scary my room is.
It's so blank and white that it would look like something from 2001, A Space Odyssey, except it's still too dank and dark. But everything else, like, this is white walls with nothing on them at all.
I like to keep it messy. It adds a certain level of decor and life to it. You know, what would happen if a creepy serial killer was really a slob?
Now, you wanna get it to that point where it looks like someone used to be in there, but they died, and now it's just the vacant room. That's where you hit the ultimate level of creepy.
Oh, God, yeah. Mm. Where all the furniture just doesn't look like that person should own it.
Yeah.
And you're like, that's creepy. Your grandpa bed. That's what that is. No, the thing I purchased for myself was one of those laminated posters of Pulp Fiction. And it reminded me of a little memory that I had about Pulp Fiction. When I saw a commercial for it on TV, I actually thought and believed that it was an old movie. Like, somehow that this movie had, because I was not aware of who any of these actors were, you know, Samuel L. Jackson.
Well, this was before we were plugged in. We didn't know shit about shit.
Yeah, we weren't plugged in, man. Fuck. Plugged in. Holy shit. I did not get the internet till I was, what, 22? Not been plugged in for a long time. I mean, I didn't have a computer till my 20s.
Mm-hmm. So you thought it was actually like a 70s type thing that had been...
Yeah, yeah. And I was asking my dad, I was like, have you ever seen this movie? And he's like, I want to go see it. And I was just like, well, I mean, do any of your friends, have they ever seen this movie? Just like, he couldn't explain to me that this was a recent movie because my brain would not believe it.
Mm.
That's how good that deception was to me. I really actually thought it was a pulp movie. So I found that he pulled it off, and the poster pulls it off in a nice way, too. And it kind of made me think also about how I wanted to redesign the website to reflect a bit more of that pulpish kind of look. And I was, I've been actually fishing around for designers that can help me with that. Because, I mean, I'm not exactly the world's finest designer. I know what I like. Mm. I can make some of it once in a while, but...
And we try to do way too much too often anyways, so being able to reach out and get somebody to help is always good. I'd say that that's actually the thing that we have generally in the past been the worst at is asking people to help, and we just keep on getting beaten to the punch by other people who have no qualms about it.
Yeah, you have to lose the fear of asking people for assistance. Because, you know, to a certain degree, when we ask for assistance, we always feel... like, there's a deficit there, right? You're saying, well, what have I done for you? Why are you helping me? And you don't see it from their perspective of saying, I've really enjoyed your shows and I want to help out. We just don't see it from that perspective.
And I want you guys to suck less in the areas that you suck in.
Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, definitely, I'm out there looking for someone who can help me take my art and sort of like just tweak it up and make it look kind of like one of those old horror movies. Because everybody, when I tried to change the logo, the first time I tried to change the logo, everybody was freaking out. because they were saying, oh, we like the old font and the Chilling Tales of Godlessness, don't lose that. And I realized that what people really liked was kind of like that pulpish sort of like terror kind of thing, which is why I remade the intro to make it sound more like that. And what I really wanted to do was make the site just that in general, like tongue-in-cheek, look at the horror of the atheists.
I'd say look at the horror of religion. That's how I look at it.
Well, we're making fun of the way the religious people see us.
That's true. We got a lot to talk about in that regard on this show.
That's right. On today's show, we're going to be talking about Glenn Beck's rally, which is the thing that we had promised last show, and probably the reason why some of you non-patrons are listening to it right now, because, again,
lots of people interested in what that crazy motherfucker is up to.
Definitely everybody's... I mean, if Glenn Beck does something, people will pay attention. And the second thing we're going to talk about is how, I guess, Stephen Hawking has just really come out and bitch-slapped God. That's what he's done. He's been like, psh, psh, we don't need you. Get out of here.
Well, okay, do you want to talk about that first or second? I wouldn't mind it as a warm-up.
Oh, you don't want to? Okay, all right.
Let's face it. Glenn Beck is...
he's easy fodder. We can end with Beck.
And right? Plus, it's political. I don't want to get fucking down on it before I, you know, have some fun with Stephen Hawking.
All right, bounce him around.
I just wanted to know what the deal is, because it seemed like people were saying that he'd left room in the equation for God in one of his previous books. But to me, it sounded like the quote that they cited was just kind of him being a bit poetic about it. Has he always been an atheist? Is what I want to know about him?
Okay, well, look, here's my answer to that question. Do you remember we were having a lot of discussions about what Bill Gates was up to, what Warren Buffett was up to, what some people tend to do when they're just starting to get closer to death? Roger Ebert has been starting to do, kind of branch out a little bit out of what we would call his speciality to talk about shit that matters to him. And I think that's because people, as they get older, you know, they realize they're a bit in legacy mode, right? I mean, in our MMA world, we talk about this all the time, how fighters have a hard time, like, just getting around that idea of legacy, because they're like, I want to just keep competing and be the best. Well, the advantage of being an intellectual is that you don't have to be the best. You can leave your legacy as a trail of breadcrumbs of your thoughts before you die.
You can write a brief history of the universe, like, 20 years ago, and coast for the rest of your life on that.
Yeah. You've already done it. So at this point, you're adding to it. I think that if you would ask me, has it always been an atheist? I would probably say, as far as I can remember reading anything about Stephen Hawking, never, ever, ever is religion mentioned at all. I just think that he was a very private man. But we're in a unique time, and I think that Stephen Hawking has basically come out and stated quite clearly, put his reputation behind this, as saying, look,
you don't need God.
He is not part of the equation.
Yeah.
He is not part of the fucking equation. Just like that mathematician, Laplace, where, you know, the classic story is Napoleon asks him to do basic calculations about the trajectory of cannons and so on and so forth. And then after he shows him all these elegant equations, he's like, well, hey, you haven't made room for God in these equations. And he's like, it was not necessary.
But was that the way it used to go? Is that you always had to make room for God? It's like Jell-O at the end of a meal.
Well, you have to say it at the beginning, this whole God thing, right? Remember how you have to be thankful? Because apparently this God is vengeful. And if you're not thankful, he will smite thee. Smite thee mightily. But yeah, so I think that's him just basically like picking a side before anyone has a chance to say, well, Stephen Hawking never said anything about that, so he probably still left room for God.
You got to watch out for that. I mean, Christopher Hitchens has been very vocal about the fact that he wants everyone to know that the only way he's going to be crying out to God is if his brain has been rotten to the core with cancer and he's completely delirious. So a lot of people are concerned. And how many notable atheists are there out there that actually get claimed by the religious side as saying, oh, you know, at the end they turned to God, or they said something vague about God here, so they obviously are not atheists.
Well, there was a huge rumor that used to run around that Charles Darwin recanted his atheism on his deathbed. And it's just that people would say that shit without proof, and then the more you say it, the more people believe it. It's just kind of how it works. If you want people to believe in shit, you just keep saying it over and over and over again. I think it's... I mean, Stephen Hawking wasn't saying anything new. A lot of what he was talking about is the same stuff that Lawrence Krauss... I put up a video a while ago where he talks about a universe that can come from nothing, because the universe is electrically neutral. And that's what you would expect from a universe that comes from nothing. And he's like, ta-da, not necessary. So this has been floating around now. Our deeper understanding of the universe, and I mean, trust me, it's just been growing by leaps and bounds in the past decade. Like, just more than anyone can really realize. And they're just like, yeah, we're starting to peer at that curtain, and it's just like, it looks like it doesn't need anything.
Yeah,
it doesn't need any ignition.
Because Hawking's statement...
No S.
No Hawking.
Hawking.
I know, but I was saying Hawking's statement.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Everybody always gets fucked up about that.
Yeah. I don't care either way. I'll mispronounce it every single day and twice on Sunday.
It's like saying nuclear and nuclear.
Exactly. It's get out of my face about that before I punch you.
Well, I still want to look legit.
Yeah, it's true. But his statement was basically that the laws of the universe just allow it to come out of nothing. And that's it's just physics. It's all because of physics, and there's nothing else. But this is where maybe religious people can go back a step, as they always do. Well, who put the physics in place, smarty pants?
It's like, they're the laws. There had to be a lawgiver. The word law is not what you think it means. It's, again, one of those theory words. You remember that last show I did where I just said we need to just make new words because idiots are better at claiming language than smart people?
Yeah, we're definitely losing the theory of argument. Just as a scientific, intelligent group of people who say that everybody should understand the difference between the general usage of the word theory out in the wild and scientific. It's like, no.
Why? My better question is why? Is it really because it's a tradition of what you call it? Guess what? This tradition sucks. It's not necessary. It's not like anybody sat down and said, well, you have to call it a theory. Man, if you don't, the whole scientific process falls apart.
Why can't we just call it a theorem? I always like that word better anyways.
That's what Richard Dawkins wants.
I'm down with Dawkins on that.
All right, then. You and Dawkins agree on something.
Yeah.
I was going to do a Stephen Hawking thing. Everybody, they fuck up my brain, those two. Say, like, Darwin, Dawking, and Hawking three times fast, and you will be fucked up. You won't even know where it ends with G anymore, or N, or S's.
I'll just stay out of it. One last thing I wanted to bring up on it, because this was the coolest thing that I thought about it, was he pointed as evidence, just kind of like a side chain to this whole we're not special thing that he was kind of going on, where he was saying that we found another planet that's configured the same way that Earth is the right distance, and it's got all the right elements. And at that point, you say, hey, guess what, idiots? We're not unique at all. There's nothing unique about our situation here.
The laws of physics, you would expect there to be Earth-like planets fucking everywhere.
We found one, which means that there are many others out there.
It's the thing, you know, there's only one more step, and that's essentially finding extraterrestrial life. And even then, you know what's going to happen. Religious people are like, wow, God is awesome. And you're just going to be like, oh, my.
I would be okay with an alien invasion where they just enslave us completely, so long as they're like, yeah, there's no God, you're dumb. I'll be there in my chains.
I'll work in your salt mines.
Making the ruler statue going, totally worth it.
Yep. And guess what, too? Here's the kicker. When you go work in those weird alien mines, you'll be mining the same elements that you mine here on Earth, because that's how the laws of physics work in a world that isn't created by some fantastical god. There's only just a slight amount of elements, and that is it, bitches. That's it. That's your playroom. So you'll probably be mining uranium for these alien species, but at least you don't have to put up with any religious bullshit.
But we would die doing that.
Well, you're going to die anyways. Everybody's going to croak, and you're just going to croak on an alien moon. You know, mining uranium.
It'd still be worth it.
Totally. I'd be like, wow, I really nailed this life. Speaking of nailing life, I want to move on to Glenn Beck.
Okay.
Because I think everybody has a kind of a seminal moment that they can come into existence. And I'm looking at Glenn Beck as a person, as a human being, and as a phenomenon, essentially, because I think by now we have to admit that he is a bit of a phenomenon.
Sure. Right? Well,
what's going on right now is a bit of a phenomenon. I'm wondering, I mean, left-wingers in America had their big Obama mania thing going on where everybody was freaking out and he was the superstar. Is this just not the right-wing version of that, where instead of yes, we can, it's yes, God can, but only if you're pure?
I don't know. There's a couple things that are unique about Beck that couldn't exist in any other time right now. Number one, the fact that he's a Mormon. This is a really important part that I don't think people understand, that fundamentally, most Christian denominations detest and mistrust Mormonism. They view it as a Christian cult, and it denies the Trinity of God. It makes it so that people can become gods themselves. They view it. They also fear part of the polyamorous undertones of Mormonism. They have plenty that they don't like.
There's a lot of ammunition. They were like the Scientologists of the late 1800s.
Yeah, exactly. So you have this. You know, there's a bit of that ecumenism that I was talking about. Like that's the way that different religions that are still Christian get along, because they're like, well, as long as it's about Christ. They take that position because of all the pressure from the outside to secularize.
Well, there's two pressures now, because you got the atheist secularism, which, you know, we might not be many, but at the very least we're fucking loud. And we've got...
And we're right.
And we're right.
And we're really smart.
Isn't that the great thing about it all?
We've got some of the smartest people, like most of them. Like, you ever hear the statistics of people who believe in God that make up the National Academy of Science?
No.
They're in the minority, man. They're like 10% or something. Pathetic. It's not much. It's kind of like old fuddy-duddy grandpa still believes in that religious things. And even those people that believe, you know, you're not going to really have a conversation with them about it. It's going to be embarrassing. It's going to be Ken Miller embarrassing, where he was... Do you remember? Were you part of that show where I was explaining how Ken Miller, who's this... I love this guy. He's a great biologist, and he's a great defender of science against creationism. But ultimately, do you know how he explains the way that God would work through evolution? Quantum undeterminacy, indeterminacy.
He went the quantum
route.
Yeah,
he went the quantum route. He went like Deepak Chopra to try to fucking pull that shit off. And you're just like, and you accused everybody else of reaching? That's the ultimate reach, man. That is so ultimate. You're like, the mysteries of the quantum world solve everything.
Well, it's the current curtain. Yep. That has not been pulled back. So you can say, God's back there, baby. And once we figure out that he's not back there, I'm sure we'll at least find another layer that they can hide God behind.
They're going to say, well, God is the multiverse or something like that. Who knows?
Anyways.
Who knows?
These people have the loud-ass atheists, you know, being crazy and saying that we know what reality is based on scientific
right.
method
so
and everything
have,
else
they,
like that.
They
and they've
that
got
budget.
Muslims as well, which they suddenly feel very threatened at. By.
Right, because, you know, historically Islam's on the rise. It's like the burgeoning new religion. It's growing faster than Christianity around the world.
If people looking at those numbers, it's not growing where it really matters, though. Just saying.
Yeah, but that's not... The way that people see it is that the more converts you have, it's like a numbers game, man. They fucking are obsessed with that shit.
They
keep tabs.
Are.
They keep tabs, boy. They're like, this is how many people believe... Oh, look at us.
I know, but you could just say, look at all the people out there who aren't Christians. There are billions of them. Be afraid. Be very afraid. It's stupid. It's not anything to be worried about. The numbers are nowhere near anything, and there's nothing really all that crazy. That crazy jihad that everyone's afraid of, where the Muslims are just going to take everything over, it's not happening anytime soon. It's not even in the foreseeable future.
But regardless... If it was, say, Ronald Reagan America, more of a conservative slant, a guy like Glenn Beck would actually be shunned. He would probably be even an outcast in conservative circles. Number one, because his religion would poison his ability to reach out to a mass market of religious believers if they weren't concerned about all these other forces, right? If they just got back to the business of wanting supremacy of their own particular sect of Christianity, yeah. But when they're not in that mode, they will grapple onto anything that smells like Jesus. Because they're like, well, you're an ally for now. And that's what I'm saying. It's like Glenn Beck is at that position right now where America, and particularly white redneck America, is very afraid of being white in America. And that fear, because this is what I think is the fundamental fear behind even everything. Sure, it's a religious rally, but at the same time, I mean, I was looking at some of the shirts that people were wearing. You know, it's Cracker Nation. You know, sort of like, don't oppress the white man. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
It's always difficult to watch white people try to have pride in themselves. It's a dangerous line to try and walk. I don't even think I could be proud of my whiteness in a loud way without it. You just can't do it. It's hard.
I just don't want to be really...
It's an unwinnable game.
I think that we should kind of move past racial pride, but I can't even say that other people have that luxury. I have that luxury because I'm white. I wouldn't have that luxury if I was another color, especially living in this country.
You would have
to
work hard to have pride in yourself, say, if you're a Mexican or a Muslim in America, because guess what? You're the enemy and everybody hates you and they look down on you and they make jokes about your sexual parts and everything else. Whole bunch of minorities that are just treated like shit that need pride because the white man keeps them down, even just in a general societal way.
Well, it's like a gentle pressure, one that you don't even realize is happening. It's just contingent. It happens despite the fact that you might not be like that at all. It doesn't matter. If the system is large enough and it there's a kind of pervasiveness of racism that acts in really subtle, small ways, they accumulate over time and they produce this, you know, the kinds of disparities that you see. What was that that you sent me a link to a really inspiring series of videos on racism in white America?
Yeah, it was something. It had the words white privilege in it. And that's
you know
all.
What? I'm gonna put a link to it.
You're gonna look it up after the
I'm
show.
I'm gonna look it up after the show
in the post.
Yeah, I'll just put it up in the post because I think it's worth watching just as a side tangent, because you know this is the bonus show. People obviously appreciate the tangent. I'm like, go to the site, get the link here. I think it's an important part, especially when you get to listen to this and then you rewatch what's happening in the Glenn Beck rally. And you start to understand the kind of weird pushback that people are having in regards to the true melting pot of society, the flattening of the earth, of really the interconnectedness between everybody, and the fact that
the true cultural amalgamation. We've been talking about the melting pot for a while, but now
it's starting to happen.
It was everybody else melting into our pot, and at this point now, all of the other ingredients are starting to overpower the that American taste that we are so proud of. It's like, you're ruining the recipe. Stop now.
But you'll destroy this soup.
I don't want to talk too much about the racial buildup of it. I did read articles pointing out the fact that it was like 99.99% white. But the key thing I wanted to talk about, I read a quote in The Atlantic about that basically summed up Beck and the rally pretty well. So we could kind of jump from there and talk about the religiousness of it. Because if you haven't been following it, I mean, I assume that it was going to be a purely political, right-wing, crazy, just a total 100% American politics. And actually what they did was they completely stayed away from that, and they just, they
whacked God off.
Oh, they did. They absolutely do. So here's the quote. Everything Glenn Beck says during this rally has to do with the discovery of faith, American history, or some connection between the two. He lists more American historical figures than it's possible to count. He tells the crowd to discover faith. He tells them the future of America rests on their personal discoveries of faith and that the nation's collective discovery of faith is important to its success.
Well, you saw this old 9-12 project.
Nine principles of 12, whatever. Oh, my God, this fucking guy.
One of them, I think, is something like, I think that America is awesome.
I just find it hilarious how offensive he is just in his gimmicky ideas. Like how this rally was on Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech was on the same day in the same location. It's just amazingly great that he didn't even realize it until afterwards. And he tried to do something with it. It's just, And 9-12? 9-12?
I mean, talking about exploiting 9-11. We do it for comedy purposes, but that's different.
We obviously have to, because people are starting to hitch their wagons to it in disgusting ways, so...
It'll just continue to happen. What do you expect? What do you expect?
My big thing about what happened with this whole rally was that if America has to turn back to God, and that's the only way they're going to succeed. What does that make us, the atheists and the other people who refuse to, quote-unquote, turn back to God? Even what does that make of anybody who might consider themselves generally religious but just doesn't believe that, you know, gay people are evil or that people shouldn't be taxed, which is a weird thing that constantly gets wrapped into this whole religious, oh, yeah, I love God, no taxes!
Can I just point out the double irony of the movement being called 9/12, citing that belief in God is an important way to heal when the entire reason behind 9/11 is due to God? I'm just going to put that out there. Belief in God made these people do this atrocious act that you're naming your new principle after. You're freaking me out with your degrees of irony here. I'm sort of like, I feel like I'm falling down this weird rabbit hole of irony.
Oh, you want to talk irony? Didn't you read something in a what was it? The Watchtowers, the Jehovah's Witness people have started putting the Watchtower online, and the opening paragraph about an article on the new atheists.
Are atheists on the march?
Yeah,
and they're complaining that we can't keep our opinions to ourselves. We're trying to proselytize? This is their problem. They have a problem
that
with that.
We dare do that. I mean, who does that? Who does that, huh?
Next thing you know, these atheists are going to be knocking at your door at fucking 10 o'clock or 8 o'clock in the morning wanting to talk to you about Charles Darwin and his buddies, his scientific buddies, and how they're going to make you change fundamentally away from God.
Didn't John Safran do that?
He did do that.
Yeah. Google John Safran, people. You're part of the bonus show. You might know, but if you don't...
We got a lot of Australian fans, so they're probably like, psst, been there, done that.
Yeah, seriously. But everybody who's not there, check them out.
Yeah, totally. Here's what I really liked about one of the points about the rally, though, and just completely different topic, is the ballooning of the number of how the report of the number of people that were there. The first report put it at somewhere about 87,000. Sarah Palin and I think The Atlantic said 100,000. Fox News put it at about 600,000. And then Michelle Buchanan said that she would refuse, that everybody has to take a stance to ensure that no one says that there weren't a million people there.
I don't know.
That's how that bullshit grows, man. That's how that bullshit grows. I'd be willing to give them 100,000. And from there... they multiply that by 10 in terms of just sheer, utter bullshit. And then they dare say that, oh, well, you can't let mainstream media tell you that there were only 100,000.
Well, it's an important part of the historical narrative. I mean, what number goes up on Wikipedia a couple years from now when they look back and they say, was this an important event or not? You need to know whether or not there was a football games worth of people there, or if there was actually like a million man march type thing that went on there, which might actually be impressive.
But that's the whole thing. It obviously wasn't. I mean, anybody that would have seen a million people marching in Washington, it would have been an impressive sight. I don't think anybody knows what a million people really looks
like. Well, that's the problem, is that nobody knows even what really 100,000 people look like. You look at the pictures... And it just looks like models. That's where when they were talking about what was it, 87 or 89,000, that was done. That number was done by a company that flies planes over crowds and photographs them to figure out how many people are there. And they're actually, CBS did their journalistic duty and actually paid to get the fucking information. Everybody else that's talking numbers, who knows?
They have an agenda.
But you know what? I'm still saying that the fact that the event happened and 100,000 people showed up, I mean, sure, it's just another football game by American standards, but these are still a lot of people who came from a lot of different places, and it's talking about a movement that's going on right now where I think just religious people, and not just the complete right-wing crazies, but even the more moderate religious people are starting to get involved. This is their Obama mania, man, and they're getting religiously fervored up for it, and they're getting ready.
I was reading an interesting article in the National Post that was trying to dissect Glenn Beck and the whole rally, and I think the one thing that they said, and I also was reading this in probe on Glenn Beck's site, that people were able to empathize with him strongly. And that leads me to one thing that I wanted to talk about on the show is a little pet theory of mine about something I call the empathy trap. And I want to just explain this kind of very quickly, what I think it is. Now, the unique thing about Beck, Glenn Beck, in this time is that the medium of television has allowed for a lot more say, leeway in the way that shit is presented. Stuff that looks like news, but that isn't. You couldn't have gotten away with that not so long ago. And they used to have this kind of standard that you're not supposed to show emotion. I mean, when JFK was shot and Walter Cronkite started shedding tears, everybody made a huge fucking deal that someone started crying on TV. Flash forward, you know, to now, where Glenn Beck is routinely crying on television.
We're practically Japanese now. It's good to weep in public. But shows you feel something.
But the whole thing about that is that television is a very personal and intimate medium, and there's a lot of people out there that want to feel something. They're afraid for whatever reasons because they've been stirred up by fear by, oh, I don't know, the likes of Glenn Beck. They're afraid and they need someone to comfort them and to empathize with. And for Glenn Beck as a character, as a human being, if you read Glenn Beck's history, you realize that, you know, I know that he's been accused of often faking his tears and so on and so forth and using onion juice or whatever. Mm. And I'm saying that probably sometimes he has to do that, but he doesn't have to dig too deep to find tragedy in his own life. You know, of shit like his mother committing suicide, I think one other sibling doing that as well, having like all kinds of problems with the law. He got arrested because he was driving his DeLorean. Yeah, he had a DeLorean
with the fucking part opened up like
wings and totally fucked up out of his mind.
That's actually kind of cool.
I know. I know, right? He had a fucking DeLorean.
Was
man.
He going 87 miles an hour? Was he...
I think he was trying to travel back in time to save his mom.
Oh, that's harsh.
So what? Fuck Glenn Beck.
I'm sorry, you caught me in a moment of empathy because he had a DeLorean. I'm like, I empathize with all DeLorean
owners. No, you empathize with
the fact... who decide to do cool things with them.
Okay, well, fine. My point is that when you're able to display that amount of empathy, whether he's an actor, whether he's not, is inconsequential. It doesn't matter to the people who are watching it who feel that connection. So if you ask, well, why does a person like Glenn Beck? It's because they empathize with him. Now, there's a bit of an irony in me saying this because we had a couple shows ago where I suggested that people should go out and seek to empathize with people because it can be inspirational. I even said that sometimes this may happen as a process of us doing this show, that people may empathize with us. But it's still a trap. It's a trap that I want people to be made aware of. The fact that it is dangerous to put so much empathy in a person because this, whatever it is I do, is still an act. And what Glenn Beck is for sure an act. But it's still fooling people, and it really is changing people's, you know, visions and minds. You know, people saying, like, I really appreciate the way that Glenn Beck educates me about his insane conspiracy theories. They're the kind of things that you could just easily, with the help of a history book, find out if they were right or wrong. But Glenn Beck doesn't need to worry about that because no one that he talks to has ever opened one unless they're trying to kill a bug with it. You know what I'm saying? Found a history book there. I'm going to throw some bugs. And that's a kind of frightening prospect because Glenn Beck empathizes and speaks to scary idiots. And they're frightening indeed. And they have a lot of fear. And these kinds of people, they dictate policy, man. They're a powerful voice. A voice that we try to counter, but trust me, we're not too good at it, okay?
Well, they have, you know, Fox News, which is kind of a gigantic media juggernaut that's controlling the narrative of American politics nowadays. And we are two guys who live in Canada in filth and squalor. But hey, that's good because it's better than looking like you live in a place where someone died and now the place is just being kept, you know, like your bedroom being too
right,
clean.
Right, but now I have a Pulp Fiction poster that I could put up there and it is probably about 30% less creepy.
There you go.
I just need to find about like two or three more. But here's the problem now. I want to make it full pulp theme and now the hard part has begun. Because how many other fucking posters like that am I going to find that are pulp?
Well, you know, you could continue along your discovering your teenage interior designer spirit and add in a Reefer Madness poster next to it. And, I don't know, some other maybe like space alien thing. I think you could probably figure something out. I think there's some poster shops that are made for you. That will help you make your choices.
Yeah, you know what I was even thinking about doing? I was thinking about putting a Super Nintendo in my room, just finding an old school one and finding a game for it. A game that I cannot seem to play on any emulators, and it's pissing me off. So I thought, man, you go old school, how awesome would it be to have an old Nintendo? The only problem is that they're all turning yellow, like fucking cigarette teeth yellow because of the plastic.
Mm.
They look awful. Anyways, we went on a bit of a tangent, but I did want to just finish what I was saying about an empathy trap. Just because, again, like, I'm looking at it from the fact that Glenn Beck is in a unique time where a lot of scared Americans that wouldn't necessarily be hooked to Glenn Beck as a personality because of some of the conflicting elements that there might exist, are still hooked to him now because everyone else, you know, there's a lot of different, we assume that the conservative right has like one cohesive voice, and it really doesn't. It's just that these voices are attempting to form, and some of them are just not happy about other people gaining notoriety. O'Reilly is not the chummy chums with Glenn Beck. Neither is Ann Coulter or any of those groups. They see each other as threats. They hate each other. Okay? They hate the fuck out of each other for something as basic as they're getting more attention. And that's what every one of those people want. That's why it's an act. They want attention. They know how to get it. They don't appreciate when someone's taking it away from them.
Well, opinionated douchebags generally tend to have opinions about other douchebags.
Well, we're douchebags, and we have opinions about douchebags.
We have lots of opinions about other douchebags. And, yeah, we are definitely douchebags.
100%. But at least we admit to being douchebags. And this is maybe the last thing I wanted to end with, Glenn Beck, is the fact that he's called himself... He says that he doesn't take anything that he does seriously, that he's a rodeo clown, his words. And I really don't think that's how he's portraying himself. That's my basic problem. It's obvious. The difference is clear when you look at, say, Stephen Colbert and Glenn Beck. Both are apparently doing the same job. At least that's what Glenn Beck claims, that he's a rodeo clown. I'm like, is that what you actually say at these rallies, that you're a rodeo clown and this is just an act and they shouldn't take it seriously? Because I don't think that's what's happening. I'm just going to put that out there.
Agreed.
All right. I think that pretty much wraps it up. We'd like to thank everybody who's a contributing member and all of you people who requested for the show. That's one of the things that we offer now, right? People email me and they say, please, I need to listen to the show.
If we're talking about something that specifically piques their interest, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, it serves us better to have it being listened to rather than not. And we try to stay optimistic and say, yeah, bitches, you'll be bonus members eventually. The crack is good. You wish for the crack. All right. With that, my name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Have a good Atheist Day, everybody.